Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, February 28, 2018, and this is episode 134 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. And I am your host, Chad King, and joining me from the pecan farm in Georgia, man, I'm ready for, you know, for some plaid-shirted boy who shall remain nameless coming across the bridge with his fishing pole. Boy, he's directing movies now and stuff, isn't he? Eric Nathanson. Opie's. Eric, man. Yeah, you're not Opie, though. But by the sounds of it, you're liking the Opie life, aren't you?
I'm loving it. Except instead of the plaid shirt, I am the Hawaiian shirt-wearing guy. So when people see the guy with the Hawaiian shirt in town, they already know it's me.
Opie smoking weed in the pecan farm.
He had to grow up sometime.
Yeah, you know, you got to do that. It's sounds like it's a pretty awesome place. Glad that you've been settling in from your previous place in the penis of America to the vagina of America. I don't know. I'm searching for euphemisms here.
It's better. It's not much better, but it's better.
It's better in different ways, yeah. Right?
Right. I can deal with things a lot better now that I have plenty of space.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of better, the Giants, of course, we last spoke 3 weeks ago before spring training started. Spring has sprung. Everybody has that renewed optimism. But that's the thing. All 30 teams have that renewed optimism. A lot of teams think that I got a chance. We have a perfect record. No one's ahead of us. But the Giants, I think it's been a remarkable last 3 weeks, I would say, since we recorded, because when I was at Media Day, and we can get to that later, one of the vibes I really picked up from the players, the reporters, and the coaches was a profound sense of optimism. It wasn't like, oh yeah, we're going to be fine, or oh yeah, last year sucked, and just we're going through the motions. I really sensed a genuine optimism for this year, and I think it's carried through a lot of the interviews I've heard since. On KMBR, from the broadcasters, from the players. And I think even though it doesn't mean anything yet, I think that's promising. I really do, because we look at last year with 98 losses with Mad Bum and the injuries and the starting staff and the spiraling out of control where it just snowballed. I think sometimes you just need a shot in the arm. And with Mad Bum back, with the three or four new additions and just that, again, that renewed optimism, things are looking up for the Giants right now. I'm certainly not saying postseason quite yet. We'll make those predictions as we get closer to the season, but how are you feeling about things, Eric?
I'm a little surprised at how positive things are. I mean, it's not often a team loses 98 games and there's optimism in the spring. You know, usually it's, you know, yeah, well, we have a long road ahead. We have a few years to get back. We're working towards it. And the Giants are like, no, screw that. We're going to be back now. And the attitude, you could see it just oozing. The McCutcheon is like the guy that it sticks out to me. He walked in. He not only did he infuse life, he brought veteran presence at the same time. So, you know, this team, it's starting to remind me of the 2010 team. I don't know if I said this last time, because it's all these veterans that are savvy, that have been around, that have been through the ringer, have been through the wars. You know, it's a bunch of just misfits getting thrown together again and seeing what they could do. I didn't expect to be this high on the Giants going into the season, but like you, and I haven't made the predictions yet, I'm feeling really, really positive going forward. Like, the numbers don't matter right now. We know that, but watching the guys just take over and be a part of it. I mean, we haven't had fun. The Giants weren't fun last year. They just weren't fun. And they're already so much more fun than they were last year. 98 losses is just such a hard thing to come back from. And, I mean, we're fortunate. We could be sitting here talking about a team like, oh, well, they traded this guy and they got rid of this guy and they're rebuilding and, you know, things are going to suck for the next 2 years. No, the Giants have gone out and done it. And, like, the players have bought in. They totally have. And I don't know if this has to do with Sabian being more involved in the day-to-day operations or not, but like the team just has taken a whole new life of its own that we haven't seen in a few years, even through championships that we didn't necessarily see.
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes that there was an uncertainty if the Giants were going to be sellers or buyers in the offseason. And right away, it looked like they were going to be buyers because, of course, they went after Stanton. And when that didn't work out, then people still said, okay, well, they missed out on the big fish, literally. Pardon the pun. maybe now they'll go, oh, you know what? Whatever. It's not worth it. We might get one mediocre guy, and that's not going to do enough. But no, they didn't. They traded away the parts they needed to. And even though some of those parts, I think, could be important down the road in your Arroyos and others, I think on the other hand, they still have a solid core of those farm-raised guys that they still have. They don't have the core four pitchers, but they still have the core of the position players. And if you wait too long, those guys are also going to be gone, or they're going to age out. And they're really going to have to start from scratch. So I think they're kind of just had this nucleus, and they figured, we have enough to stay just under the luxury tax threshold. Let's do this. This is the last couple of years we have at a shot at this. And they did. And I think you're right, is that the players that are coming in, and of course the players that are already here or have been here, look at that commitment from ownership and say, okay, they're all in, we're all in, we can still do this. And it is a different feeling. It is funny for a 98 loss team to have this sense of optimism. And I know we're drinking, you know, the Kool-Aid. I get it. We're all Giants fans. And so that's part of the issue. We also have to realize, what is the perspective from the third party, the outside baseball experts? But I've been looking at that. And of course, no one's picking the Giants to win the West or have a great shot at the World Series. And I would agree with that. But at the same time, most of these predictive sites and authors I've been reading, even though it's early in spring training, but just analyzing the trades, are like, yeah, I mean, how, number one, how can the Giants not be better, even without the trades, right? I think most people agree 98 losses was an anomaly. That was an outlier. I think by default, you got to improve them 5+ games just because of bad luck. But then you consider the bum injury, then McCutchen and Longoria, and, you know, the other trades they made. And it's, I would say it's got to add at least 10 to 15 games. I between those 4 to 5 players, that's only a couple, 3 wins per player. And I think that's reasonable because that's what a lot of their wars are kind of floating around. So if you're improving this team 15 games, well, that's when you're getting to what, 83, 84 wins. And so if you get that extra push from chemistry, from just things going right, whatever, I could see this team certainly being above 500 and maybe being in the mid to high 80s, enough to contend for a wild card. So a lot of national writers are thinking along those lines. And so I don't think it's all Kool-Aid. I do think there's some good reasoning behind that feeling.
They seem to be, the Giants are like the darlings of the national media this offseason. Like, I've never seen so many positive things on, oh, look, the Giants have done this and the Giants have done that. And, you know, while everybody goes this direction, the Giants are going in a different direction and it's working. Like, I haven't seen any, you know, oh, what are the Giants doing type articles. Everybody seems to be high on the Giants, which could be a really good thing or a really scary thing.
Or a really scary thing. You're right about that. Yeah, well, this team, you know, knock on wood, is not going to lose 98 games. It's just not. Now, it may not make the playoffs. Who knows? And I can almost guarantee you it's not going to win the West. I mean, the Dodgers are essentially the same team they have been the last couple of years. There's no reason to believe they're going to lose less than, you know, 90 to 94 games, if not more. You know, yeah, they have some of their relievers that have changed or what have you. But the long-term prognosticators, and most people, I think, agree the Dodgers unless they have just a series of horrific injuries. You know, they got the shot to take the West. But anyway, let's get back to the Giants. They're looking pretty good. It's in the spring. We all feel good. They're 2-3-1 this spring. Records don't matter. But let's talk about the fun stuff. I think some of the notable performers so far, it was yesterday's game, of course, the Giants and the Brewers, I think it was. Or was that today? I think today was the Brewers.
No, it was, yesterday was the D-backs.
D-backs, right. Today was the Brewers. They actually, the Brewers scored 7 in the bottom of the ninth to make it a tie, a 10-10 tie. So it was almost like back in the Giants' face.
My God, the scores of these games. It's like every game, 10 runs, 12 runs. It's unbelievable.
Spring training, the ball just flies. And speaking of the ball flying, the journeyman Kyle Jansen, of course, hit a walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth to win it for the Giants 14-12, and the Giants actually scored 6 runs in that ninth inning to prevail. So it was fun for the fans down there. I did not hear it live. I only heard the broadcast afterwards, but pretty cool. But Kyle Jansen so far is – Jansen, sorry, I said Jansen. Kyle Jansen so far is 4-for-7 with 3 bombs. So he's got 4 hits, 3 of them home runs. 7 RBI, and of course, including that walk-off grand slam. So this guy's played for several teams in the past. He's never really landed anywhere. Again, look, I hear all these people on Twitter going, oh my God, this guy's the next coming. It's like, no, it's spring training, guys. I mean, how many spring... You can go back through all the spring training stats for the last 20 years, and there's always several guys who have only had cups of coffee in the major leagues who have been close to leading the spring in home runs or RBI or average. Yep. It happens every year. So everyone, just calm down.
I brought it up in a piece this week. Mark Menicazzi was the guy.
Yes, Menicazzi.
Four years ago. And I honestly couldn't even remember his name. So
didn't
that's
he have,
how
what,
much,
eight bombs that spring or something?
Something like that. And it was somewhere up there. It was crazy. Like every time I turned around, he was doing something. And that's the thing, though, is 4 years later, I couldn't even remember his name. You know, so Kyle Jensen may be tearing it up, but he has more home runs this spring than he has in his entire major league career. You know, the guy, he hit his first, I don't know if you knew this, his first home run came off of Madison Bumgarner in September of 2016.
I did not know that.
Yeah, nice. And his second home run came off Rich Hill. So his only two career home runs, his first one came off Bumgarner.
Dodger and a Giant, yeah.
Yep, exactly. He was playing for Arizona at the time.
Right.
You know, and the running joke is, you know, does he tell Bumgarner or not? But there's always guys like Jensen that, you know, jump out. I mean, I didn't realize he had 3 home runs already, but still, I mean, he's also facing, you know, a Double-A pitcher.
Yeah.
It's not like he's...
Every team is throwing out the Double-A pitchers right now. So
right,
the big-time starters are getting an inning or two. That's it.
That's part of why spring training is important, is because the pitchers, more so than the hitters, need to work out their arms. And, I mean, we saw it. Bumgarner pitched decently on Sunday, but, you know, he was yanked after a certain amount of pitches. They won't let these guys pitch more than, you know, they want to. 30, 35 pitches, that's it. So it's tough to really get a gauge on if a guy has stuff, I guess that's the best way to put it. And so guys like Jensen are going to, you know, pop up and be those – oh, my God. I mean, Justin Maxwell was that guy a few years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Giants fans, don't think Kyle Jensen is making the team as our starting left fielder.
No.
That's not happening, okay? He'll be lucky to start in AAA, and he'll be lucky to get a couple ABs with the Giants sometime during the year when the Giants have 3 or 4 injuries, but which I'm sure will happen at some point.
So many people on the depth chart ahead of him. It's not even funny.
It's not even funny. I know even guys like Mac Williamson and Jarrett Parker, I mean, they were the ones that were battling for the left field position last year for that, or even it was going to be a double-headed monster. And now you got Austin Jackson and Duggar in center field. And, of course, you got McCutcheon in right and Pence in left. So you also have Gregor Blanco, and then you got Williamson and Parker, and you have several other players in the game as well. So, you know, typically a team only carries, you know, 5 outfielders max. You already have 4 that are going to be starting in the mix. So you really are fighting for that one extra outfield spot, and that's between probably the 3 or 4 main guys there. So that's why guys like Kyle Jensen and others, I mean, they're not even sniffing it. They're so far down on the depth chart right now. They're just trying to impress enough to get, you know, some committed ABs in AAA or AA, and then maybe they'll have a shot via injury later in the year or via trade. I mean, that's really all they can hope for.
It's a showcase for them, for it's a showcase. Other teams. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and they know this. They know they're not making the club, but they're trying to show off. Brandon Belt, it just came out in an article that it looks like he was suffering from severe depression after his fourth concussion last year, which I guess is not a surprise, but he was dealing with a lot of those mental issues. I guess he feels a lot better now, but he's 5-for-10 this spring. He's looking spry and athletic. Mack Williamson, who we just mentioned, has 2 jacks so far this spring. Ty Block has the most innings pitched on the team so far with 5, has not allowed a run, only 2 hits, maybe, oh, sorry, 3 hits, and he's struck out 7, so he's looking real good. Miguel Gomez, he had, 30-plus at-bats with the Giants at the end of the year last year. Little second baseman, much shorter than me, and yet almost as heavy as me, which is really hard to fathom.
Yeah, and he hits the ball hard.
He hits the ball hard. He's 5-for-11 so far with a bomb and 3 RBI, so he's looking pretty good as well. I think those are the guys that, in a very, very small sample size in the beginning of spring, because they spread these ABs and innings out so thin that even through 6 games, most of these guys only have a few at-bats. I mean, you look at the depth chart, and most guys have 3, 4, 5 at-bats, so there really isn't too much to go on right now. Same with the pitchers. Bumgarner's got like 3 innings pitched. All these guys are usually, they're around 1 to 3 innings right now. Ty Block happens to have the most. So again, nothing we can infer of. Again, it's spring training. Pitchers, like you said, are working on stuff more than the hitters. So pitchers are usually at a disadvantage because they're, 1, behind the development curve, behind hitters, and 2, the established veterans, or the ones who know they have a spot on the club, they don't really have any pressure to perform. So a lot of times they go out and use spring as a chance to work on mechanics. So they'll go in an inning saying, I'm going to throw more breaking balls this inning just to work on this. I'm going to work on my slide step. I'm going to work on a hand position or a foot position. And they don't care about the results. They're just trying to get consistency in certain aspects of their game. And they literally don't care about the results. So a lot of the established veterans, you got to throw the numbers out the window. I mean, look at Matt Cain, and Tim Lincecum. Every spring, even when they were aces, they were blown up in the spring, and everybody always got worried, and they ended up being fine until, of course, at the end during the regular season. So
it'll happen this year too. Somebody will get blown up, and everybody will be like, "Oh my God, can this guy handle it?" And then the season will start, and everything will be normal again.
Yeah.
I put a thing out with Wild Predictions, and I think Smarsh is that guy who's going to get lit up, and everybody's going to be like, oh my God, Bumgarner's there, Cueto's there, there's these other guys fighting for the spot, we need Smarsh to be okay, and the guy's getting lit up, and if he does, it's fine, as long as they go into April feeling like they're where they're supposed to be, because guys like Jensen, you mentioned the veterans, they're all kind of established and ready, but guys like Block, Andrew Suarez, Chris Stratton, Derek Holland, Tyler Beede, they're fighting for those 2 pitching rotation spots. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Even though it's, it just turned March 1st where I am, even though it's, still February, these guys, their innings matter. They're things that every pitch for them matters. Like Block hasn't given up a run yet. I mean, that's huge. He knows he's got all this competition this spring. It's really kind of curious. That's what I'm looking forward to the rest of spring, is seeing how the rotation shakes out. Because there's, like I said, 5 guys for 2 slots. So who knows which guy is going to step up. Suarez had another, good outing today. Mm-hmm. I think he pitched like 2 1/3 innings or something like that. As far as the veteran guys, they're all just going to be there. And if these young guys step up their game, it could be important of things to come. Who knows? I'm so positive about this year. And last year, I was like the opposite. So it's really kind of confusing.
Well, we didn't mention this at the top of the show. And, of course, this happened between our last show and this show. But left-handed bullpen depth was severely limited. Especially with Will Smith being out till at least May 1st, if not longer. But man, they got Tony Watson, and I think that is just a hell of a signing. And they structured his deal so it was back-ended and with a lot of bonuses, so they stayed under the luxury tax, and a lot of people really gave them kudos. And of course, Mark Melanson was integral in recruiting him because they played together in in Pittsburgh. So he said, hey, man, there's something special here. And it worked out. So I think it's going to be awesome. I mean, he obviously had a brief stint with the Dodgers last year. He did pitch in the World Series. He actually won, was the winning pitcher in two of the three Dodger wins in the World Series versus the Astros, which is incredible to me. he's, you look at his stats, he's pretty dominant. He definitely looks like he could be a Jeremy Affeldt clone of some sort. In terms of where he's going to fit into, not necessarily always a setup man, although he was Melanson's setup man, but certainly someone who can plug in between the fifth and the eighth inning any time to face that batter. And that's really, really going to help out the Giants' bullpen depth. And I thought that was, I think that's a more important signing than Austin Jackson. Some people may disagree, but I think it's more significant.
I tend to agree. Sorry, I had to sneeze. I tend to agree.
A fire there?
Yeah, the Watson signing was a surprise because I didn't think that they were going to do anything with the bullpen. And it's the added bonus. Tony Watson is such a great name to say. Tony Watson. I mean, he's like that. It's like that. I don't know if you've seen people out there. If you've seen Coming to America, there's a scene where Arsenio plays this old preacher, and he's talking. And Tony Watson's the kind of name, and I just can't wait till he comes in this year, and we get to talk about Tony Watson because he's just that guy. It's like it just sounds so good. His name, it flows. So you know, did you see what happened last night? Yeah, Tony Watson was something else.
Oh my God.
I love the name. I don't know why. It's just one of those names. Sammy Watkins. It's like that, you know?
So, you know, one thing I was looking at the Giants stats, and I don't know how I missed this because they signed him back in December, but Pudge Rodriguez's son, Derek Rodriguez, was signed by the Giants. How did that miss my radar? Did that miss your radar?
Yeah, I didn't realize when I saw the name Rodriguez there was any connection.
You know, he's not on the 40-man roster or anything like that. But anyway, I just bring him up because I saw his name in the pitching stats, and then I clicked on it, and it said, oh, here's the son of Pudge Rodriguez. And I was like, wait, what? How did I miss this?
Yeah, they mentioned it Sunday on the broadcast. They mentioned
it. Oh, did they?
Before he got blown up, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. I was going to point out he got blown up. One-third of an inning, 6 earned runs, so he has an ERA of 162 right now. I'm not saying he's a bad pitcher or anything like that. He has a lot of minor league accolades, but it was just... Okay, Pudge Rodriguez is on the team. His son is on the team. I didn't realize that.
I mean, it's not like we don't have good memories of Pudge either. We hate Pudge. I mean, the 2003. I'll never forget that. Yep. So it's like
showing
I don't feel
that ball.
Bad.
Yeah, oh. I wanted to knock that shit out of his hand. I know.
Yep.
So another signing that we don't need to talk too much about is Derek Holland, who's going to be fighting for a roster spot because, again, we have those two four and five starters, which we have, you know, a good four pitchers vying for. And Derek Holland definitely has a decent track record in the major leagues, being a longtime Texas Ranger, among other teams. But one thing I did not know is that he's one hell of an interview. I listened to his KNBR interview, and I had heard how just funny and comedic he is and how he just plays with the interviewers. And I think he's a future broadcaster or future radio personality. But his impressions is what really, really got me. He not only does remarkable Harry Carey, but he does several others. So anyway, I just wanted to play a little clip from his KNBR interview from a couple of days ago, and it starts off with Harry Carey describing Johnny Cueto.
Hey, it's nice and cold outside. We've got Johnny Cueto. He's running around, and I see his hair flying everywhere, but God forbid he's not even moving. It's got to be the wind blowing. He's walking back in. He's exhausted. Hey. Somebody throw him some water.
Dude, listen, you're nailing it. All right, so I got to ask a question. I pray you've been asked this probably a million times, but since I'm just meeting you, you in a SmackDown cage match.
You're talking wrestling
carry,
now.
No, no, no. I'm talking just carry on carry, just imitations, and may the best man win. You and Will Ferrell. How do you rank a Will Ferrell
He's
character?
He's got me. He's the original Harry Carey.
I don't know about that, though.
Oh, see, come on.
What I did was I didn't make eye contact. I just looked out and let the voice come in. I mean,
sounds incredible, huh? You heard birds chirping and everything.
Although
you were only missing an ice-cold Budweiser.
You affect some kind of face, though, when you're doing it, too.
You gotta get into it.
Yeah.
Now, what if he ever welcomed Arnold Schwarzenegger to the booth, though? I mean, that would be, like, say Schwarzenegger's promoting a movie. He comes to Wrigley, does a stint with him, right?
I mean, it would be, hey, I've got a friend here. He's the governor of California. Give it up for Arnold. Can't even say his last name, Schwarzenegger.
Nice.
Listen to me. Here we are now. We're watching Johnny Cueto outside. He's running. Look at him. He's getting to the chopper. Hurry up. Come on, you idiot.
What body parts are you noticing on Johnny Quinn? Yeah, the
really
biceps,
going right
now. The quads.
Saw his. Look at his legs. They're so muscular.
Yeah.
You can tell he works out. He's been doing all kinds of squats. Come on.
You
get deeper. Come on.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a little Derek Holland for you.
I mean, he it's funny because his Harry Carey reminds me of Dempster, Ryan Dempster's Harry Carey, too.
Yeah, he's really good at it, too. Oh,
yeah,
man.
You know, it's funny, though, because growing up, I grew up watching Harry Carey. And these guys who do the impressions, I feel like Holland is doing Will Ferrell instead of doing Harry specifically. You know what I mean?
You might be right, because these guys are younger, right? So they haven't grown up actually watching much of the original Harry Carey. But a lot
Harry's
of them
been dead 20 years.
Yeah, a lot of them grew up watching Will Ferrell do Harry Carey. So you actually might be right, because he does have a little of that Will Ferrell. Yeah, I totally agree with you, but... Anyway, that's pretty awesome. I look forward to future interviews with him. All right, so we got to wrap up here. I got to get going. But one of the big things that happened in the Giants stratosphere here 2 days ago, I guess it was, is big time Timmy Jim, man. Holy crap. He came out. He did his showcase a few weeks ago, I guess 2 weeks ago. And by all reports, including some of the scouts and Bobby Evans, the GM for the Giants, said he looked really good, athletic, lean, mean. He put on some weight, and he was throwing 92 to 93. His previous showcase, you know, he was throwing 90, and he was still signed by the Angels. But even though, I don't know, it was 12 or 14 teams showed up, something like that, for the showcase, a lot of teams were interested, and the rumor had it that his agent said he will only sign a major league contract. He was not going to deal with the minor leagues anymore. And then, of course, the last couple of days, the rumors came out that it was down to Texas and the Dodgers, who were rumored to have offered him a major league contract. And Twitter went crazy, just begging Timmy not to sign with the Dodgers. And then just a few hours later, he did officially sign with the Texas Rangers. I guess $1 million for the year, plus bonuses and incentives and all sorts of crap like that. But it's a guaranteed major league contract. I think that's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. I mean, Texas has really reshaped their pitching staff and their bullpen, and they certainly are taking a chance here. But the dude did not pitch at all in 2017. He got blown up in 2016. He hasn't had an ERA under 4 since 2011, 7 years ago.
Wow.
7 years ago. And, of course, that's in the National League. And so you got to think to yourself, yeah, he can get a few guys out, but I mean, really a major league contract? I mean, clearly he got minor league offers, but two teams stepped up, and who knows why he went with Texas. I'm sure we'll find that out later. It may have had nothing to do with the Giants and the Dodgers, may have had something to do with whatever. I think a lot of people were saying the National League would be better for him, of course, because of the competition and the double switches and how long he would have to be in the game or how short he could be in a game. But the reality is he's now going to play for the team that he dominated in the 2010 World Series. And it's going to be really interesting. And the Rangers visit San Francisco in August. Now, who knows if he's even going to be with the team by then. This is so late in the season. But I can tell you right now, that would be a spectacle. if Timmy faced his former club in August. But
yeah.
before we get to that, what do you think?
Well, from everything I've been reading, he's probably going to take a bullpen role.
Yes, exactly. It's a bullpen role for sure.
Yeah, they're not looking to start him, and I'm a little surprised, to be honest. I didn't expect a major league deal.
No,
but,
I didn't either.
I mean, he couldn't be a Dodger. I mean, it just that wouldn't have been right. I can't see Timmy in Dodger blue. I mean, I was one of the people that's like, no, please, like I'll buy a Texas Rangers jersey because I love Timmy that much. I would never buy a Dodgers jersey. You know, I would not spend my money on something like that. That's if this works out. If this works out, I'll have a Texas Ranger 55 by the end of the year.
No, he's 33 years old. I mean, he's not a young baseball player, but he's not an old baseball player. He's kind of on the backside of, you know, average, right? You know, plenty of pitchers have lasted in their late 30s, if not even later for a few of them, but you know, 33, man, he still, I guess, got some gas left in the tank. I love the guy so much. I wish him no ill will. It really sucked to see him get trashed in Anaheim. And I really hope he holds his own. That's fine if he has a 4.5 ERA in the American League as a reliever, whatever. I just don't want to see his ass get handed to him again. And he is DFA'd come June. First,
yeah,
or something.
That's all
like
I
that.
Care about. Stay with the big club all year. You know, yeah. It'd be awesome to see he still has something. Because, apparently, you know, the Giants got first look though. Apparently, he did a private showcase for the Giants before he did the showcase for all the teams as a courtesy to his old team. And I mean, frankly, I know that the Giants are fighting for bullpen roles, but there's no room for Lincecum on the ball club right now.
I think
now.
That's
really
what it
isn't.
Is that there really isn't any room for him and. I think it would have been such a huge distraction to the team when they got all this momentum going in with these new signings and this fresh blood. It's just probably not the right time. It probably isn't. If they had sold the farm and they were planning on the rebuild, I would have been all for it because it would have been like, whatever, it's not going to hurt, right? And it would have put some more butts in the seats. But the fact that they're actually going for it, I just, no, it's not right.
No, and I mean, and then if he had struggled, like you said, distraction, it would have been like, you know, oh my gosh, what's wrong with Timmy? And we'd all be concerned about Timmy when this team is probably over there doing well. At least I think they'll do well.
Yeah, but then they got to deal with like demoting him or DFAing him, and it just
right. You don't want to, like you said, butts in the seats, and you don't want to anger a fan base for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, one of the things that happened between our last episode is that I did go to Media Day, and that was way back on February 9th. So that was 3 weeks ago this Friday. But even though that information is old, I would suggest that you check it out on our website, torturecast.com, or our YouTube channel. We got a lot of feedback from that and a lot of hits. It was a lot of fun. And I think, you know, for a lot of you, of course, most of you haven't been to a media day type thing. It is, it's its own monster. And what I mean by that is it's like a speed dating for interviews. And in almost the literal sense, because they put all these little tiny high bar tables, these high cocktail tables out for most of the team and coaches with their little placard names on there. And then they have several of the suites reserved for the more important interviews. So that's like Bruce Bochy, Buster Posey, Madison Bumgarner. This year, Evan Longoria, Andrew McCutchen, Bobby Evans, Brian Sabian, and Brandon Crawford. But all the other tables were even filled up with, you know, Brandon Belt, Joe Panik. There were some of the larger names that just had their little cocktail tables, and you just walk up and you're just like, you know, hey, what's your sign? You know, do you like long walks on the beach kind of thing? It's a very meat market. No, I'm serious. It's like a really weird meat market kind of vibe. It's very strange because you kind of at the cocktail table sort of wait in line behind other reporters and everybody gets there 5 minutes or whatever. But I was able to get a very long interview with Evan Longoria. I mean, it's, you know, it's more fluff than anything, but that's because Media Day is its own monster where most of the reporters are there are asking softball questions. It's kind of like the break-in period for the team, for the rookies, for the new coaches and the new players. And really, it's like, so what's your favorite food? You know, hey, do you like, you know, do you like San Francisco? Hey, like, you know, what do you like to do in the off season? That's 95% of the questions. It really is. When you overhear even the veteran reporters. And then later in the year, when you're in the clubhouse in the middle of the season and it's after a loss, that's when you hear the hard-hitting questions. So it's a different vibe. It's a lighter vibe, and that has something to do with maybe the optimism as well, is that everybody's kind of in a good, jovial mood. You can certainly tell some of the players don't necessarily want to be there.
you know? Well, it was funny. Longo had this, like, as you're talking to him, he kept having this faraway look in his eyes. And I think, did he just keep looking out at the field? Is that what
he was looking out at? The field. Yeah, so he was in a suite, and so the sunlight is on him from the field. The reason I didn't get video of, let's say, Crawford is because his back was to the field and the camera just couldn't get anything. It was just a silhouette. So I just put down the audio recorder. That's why, like, Crawford's interview is just audio. Belt is just audio because he was against, even though he's at a table, he was against the light. And then I got McCutcheon on video, but that was a group interview with like a good 10 reporters. And man, Andrew McCutcheon, like you said earlier, he was the opposite of Longo. He was the opposite of Crawford. McCutcheon was just gung-ho. Like, wait, what'd you say? What? Oh, yeah. Da-da-da-da-da. And he'd tell a story. He was telling a story about how he met his wife, how he got his number, Roberto Clemente.
They were good stories, too. If you haven't checked out Chad's McCutcheon, that's a good one. He's a lot of fun to listen to. The story about how he got his number and how he kind of hates Tom Gorzolani for it now.
Yeah.
But doesn't. You know what I mean? It's just so funny that he's like, I thought it was really sweet when Kutch said, you know, I started seeing kids wear number 22 and I had to keep it.
And he had to keep it when he saw kids wearing his number. And he had that twinkle in his eye, man. I mean, he was so enthusiastic, so energetic. He was super happy to be there. Crawford, even though he generally, "Hi, I'm Brandon Crawford of the San Francisco Giants." That's the way he always talks. He has a little sparkle in his eye most of the time where you still see the personality. That day he didn't have it. He did not want to be there. Longo was a little in between. He was kind of like, yeah, and then he'd tail off and then come up and tail off. But I've heard he's not a media favorite either, even in Tampa. Not a curmudgeon, just not, you know, not a darling.
He's not gonna give you the crazy soundbite.
He's like Buster Posey.
Yes.
Very, very, very similar to Buster Posey. And then, of course, Brandon Belt. He's always great. I love him. He's really fun to interview. This wasn't as jovial, but he was really, really jacked up about the Giants this year. He said his noggin's fine. I asked him about a bunch of the tests that he went through this past year. And then, you know, what he was really thinking about in the offseason. And it was just about the losing. I brought this up to Crawford, and I think maybe it wasn't communicated as well it should have been. So I think maybe it was a wordplay kind of thing. But Belt, and I'm mincing words here. This is paraphrasing, but Belt basically was saying, I didn't like how the team didn't respond right away last year. We got in this losing streak, and the team just thought, because like in years past, don't worry, it'll play itself out. We'll be fine. And it didn't. And it kept going. And it kept going. And it kept going. And he was essentially saying that they just couldn't get out of that funk. And there just didn't seem to be urgency to get out of that funk. And so that's one of the things he was trying to make sure this year that wouldn't happen. I think the way I explained it to Crawford was a little misinterpreted, because he was like, well, I don't think that the players really can do anything or say anything about it. So I think he misinterpreted what I was asking him. But it was more like, hey, Belt said that there needed to be some urgency and, you know, some response to a losing streak. And I think Crawford was kind of like, you can't really do jack shit about a losing streak. It just happens and you do have to play it out. So he, I think he was a little annoyed, quite frankly, by that question. But, you know, it is what it is. And then, of course, Bruce Bochy was, again, another group interview. And he's just so mellow. And he just says some funny crap. He's one of the guys I would love to have a beer with or several beers with. Just me and him, just talking baseball, just talking life. That would be so enjoyable because he's full of old wisdom is the way I kind of think of him. He's not an old crotchety guy. He's a really dry, has a really dry wit. He has a really valuable things to say in as few words as possible. And it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch. But anyway, yeah, check those out.
We're going to miss Bochy when he's gone.
Yeah, because, you know, he's got this year and next year left on his contract. And, you know, unless the Giants lose another 98 games, he should be with the team through 2019. And by then, I think that's going to be it. World Series or not. Because, you know, plenty of managers and coaches have left after championships. I think that, you know, we are looking at the last 2 years of Bruce Bochy. So we'll see what happens. But all right, so that's been it. Eric, of course, been writing a ton on the website. Please go check out his articles on torturecast.com. They've been incredible. Definitely a lot of people have been checking it out. And I'm sure he's going to continue with it to some extent. I've got to contribute my own, so we'll see. We'll see. But Eric, man, you've been prolific, and it's been real fun to read it too. It's amazing. I'm not just tooting our horn or your horn, but you read a lot of these national writers, and it's very USA Today, fifth grade level, and it's like, crap, these guys are getting paid for this hogwash. This just like blah. It's like you're not even telling me anything. You're just, but you really have a way of bringing a lot of interesting information and predictions and funny anecdotes and other things to the table. So anyway, I just want to say thank you because, you know, wish we could pay you.
I'm just excited for baseball season. And, you know, I want to share it with everybody who listens to TortureCast, pays attention to us, you know, and might click on over. You know, if maybe they read one day and say, oh, I haven't listened to the podcast yet, and they tune in, you know, all the better. I really am. I'm giddy for baseball season. I have the room and the space to do it now. And the story ideas just keep coming right now, which is really surprising considering it's spring. Like, just the other day, I threw out a bunch of wild predictions for spring training, and, like, they're not real. They are, but they aren't. You know, it was just for the fun of it. Like, I brought up Hector Sanchez is going to have a great spring, you know, but who cares? The backup role is set. You know, little random things. Like, Pablo is probably going to make the club. And, you know, just little random predictions to put out there just to get the juice going. It's, you know, one or two things a week just as a little taster until the season starts. And then I have no idea what's going to happen then. But I have a feeling I'll be writing through the entire season.
All right, so I think through the spring we're going to try and get back on our weekly schedule. I think it's important to do that because so much happens from week to week. So look for us every week. We're going to try to regularly schedule it on Monday nights, but we'll see what happens from now on. But until then, this has been episode 134. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast or individually at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2 for Eric, or at ChadK21 for myself, or like us as a group on Facebook at TortureCast. For Eric, this is Chad King signing off, and we'll see you next time for episode 135. Go Giants. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.